Welcome to Aim Higher, a show designed to help us realize the leadership potential inside of all of us. I'm Skip Pritchard, CEO, author, blogger, student of success, and your host. I'm here with Tom Ryan. He is the All-American college wrestler who became a storied wrestling coach. I knew very little about wrestling until I read your great book, and it's amazing. He's the head coach of the Ohio State University wrestling team, and he has written a great book called Chosen Suffering, Becoming Elite in Life and Leadership, which is a fantastic read. And for everyone who knows all the principles and things that I love and study, it's all in this book. Like, it's all here, but you can read it from the perspective of somebody going through it and learning. So it is fantastic. So thanks for coming in to talk about it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I know you're about as well-read as anybody that I know. So that's quite a compliment. So I appreciate that.
I do read a lot.
Glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. I do read a lot. It was really, really good. Well, Tom, you open up the book. You talk about three pillars of success: your mind, your relationships, your environment. And I want to zero in just on the first one for a minute, your mind. And I'm going to quote you because it's so good in this book. It says, "What we allow in our mind must be well vetted, because over time it's reflected in our actions. Our daily choices mirror our thoughts. It's our birthright to block and evict negative thoughts that don't belong and welcome life-giving thoughts into our minds. This is hard, but anything worth attaining is." So much wisdom packed right in those words. And the question I have in this pillar of success of your mind is, how do winners vet their thoughts? You know, how do they control that part or manage that part for your mind? Because it seems to be the gateway to everything else.
Yeah, well, I think belief systems are so incredibly strong. And for me, I was very fortunate that the home, right? So much of this often is in, you know, what are we learning in our homes? As a young person growing up, I was always shared a few things. One, I was loved deeply. Two, there was incredible truth shared with me. There was trust, incredible love, and incredible trust. So I say now, like, truth and love, right? Every conversation is truth and love. And I got that in my home. So early on, I was able to create a belief system that all things work for my good. And I think having that, which, you know, now that I'm older, I look back and it's like, well, why do I see things? So much of it with the people I was around early on, the environment that I was in, the love that I felt, the honesty that I experienced. I think the first thing we have to recognize that it is our right. Like, every word that's uttered doesn't have to stay in your mind. And we called it Ohio State Wrestling, right? Being the landlord of your mind, which is really being a steward of it. And not giving up that right that everything somebody says doesn't have to exist in your mind. So just being very aware of what you're putting in, because one of my favorite books is "As a Man Thinketh" by James Allen, and he talks about how I have the quote, I can't remember exactly, but how what goes in and stays in will be fertilized and watered, and if you don't want it watered, then you got to leave the power to evict it. So I think just early on for all of us is just knowing that, guard your mind.
So
what you
good.
See, what you hear, what you read, what you put in is so critically important.
I love that. In my book, I said the most important microphone in the world is the one in your mind.
So absolutely.
Guard it. So I loved that. Well, later on in the book, you even say this, which I linked to the pillar of the mind. I'm not sure if it should be, but you said, train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose. Train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think we have a term, a wrestling term, which I think is a general leadership term. Don't protect anything. If we talk about mantras, because the mind will run. The mind, if we let it. So we use a lot of little mantras, short 3-word sentences that redirect your thinking. And one of them is like, don't protect anything. Because I found just in if we're talking wrestling, the wrestling space, if you're thinking about what you might lose, you're not really experiencing the glory and the beauty and the magic of what you can be, right? If you're protecting what that type of way. So
it's very wise. It's that, yeah, that it's old just, quote, the fear of loss is greater than the desire for gain.
Right, absolutely. So it's allow yourself, you know, visualization is so powerful, right? We know that the best athletes in the world, probably a lot of the best leaders in the world, they spend so much time visualizing. Yeah, any Kobe Bryant, you know, interviews. I mean, this guy talks about the power of what he knew he could be, and how he used his mind to visualize this stuff. So, just allowing ourselves to envision what we were made for is really important. Of course, which ties into, for me, a big faith component that this is bigger than me, and this is something that, you know, if we can marvel at the pyramids, and we can marvel at the space shuttle, and we can marvel at the Dell computer, and we can marvel at all these things were built. When you look at the human being compared to those, they fail in comparison. So we're an accident. Those are all brilliant. So that's really led me to a thinking of, you know, I'm not here by accident. I'm created. I'm loved deeply. And to explore just how magical my life can be if I think in a way that I should be thinking.
Allow you to live that God-given purpose. It's powerful. Well, reading the story, and people have to read the book to read all the story of your life, because the twists and turns are so fascinating. And I may get the schools wrong, but I think you were at Syracuse.
Correct, yeah.
And you're at Syracuse, and you have a scholarship. You're doing well.
Yeah.
And you walk away, and you go to Iowa, and you walk on. You don't know what's going to happen. That's a huge risk. Like, that was a huge risk. And I'm curious about risk-taking, people that are winners, and that mindset of, I'm willing to take the risk, and why, and how, and what was that like? As you look back and think, wow, that was a big risk. Why did you take it, and how do people learn from that lesson?
Yeah, I think in retrospect, you know, looking at, you know, I was on a full scholarship at Syracuse. I was living with my brother, who was a great example. We were training partners. And I remember coming to him after my sophomore year and saying, there's just more I want. There's more for me. So I think the underlying theme, I would say, was deep love, right? It's knowing, you know, not what you can live with, but what you can't live without, right? That type of thinking. And I felt like the University of Iowa at the time was the creme de la creme. They were the standard in the sport of wrestling. Their head coach was Dan Gable. He won every Big Ten championship he ever coached in. Maybe 25, 26 in a row, 18 national titles. He was an Olympic champion. So I knew that he knew, and he was producing champion after champion. So I knew that if I could insert myself, you know, watching something and reading about it and listening to it is one thing. And we both know experiencing it is something far different. So I felt like I had to experience what was happening out there at the University of Iowa in order to really raise my level of wrestling. But the underlying premise was, I deeply love this. And for whatever reason, I imagine myself being on my deathbed and saying, I could have. Why didn't I? Like, why didn't I go do that? And I talked to mom and dad and said, look, I'm going to transfer. I took out some loans, drove my car out to the University of Iowa, spent some time in the car, made some friends. I was asked to live with one of the best wrestlers in the world. We became friends, and it really transformed my life. So I think, right, the underlying theme, right, every, you know, a lot of leadership is about, right, the willingness to take chances, I mean, and take risk, and it ended up working out. And I would say this, even if I didn't make the team, even if I didn't have the success I had, there's no question I'd look back at this and say, it was worth it, because it was about the fullness of who I could be and not being afraid of failing, right? Failing wouldn't have been not making the team. To me, failing would have been not going, you know, not going. So I moved out there, and it worked out. Got great coaching, made great friends.
Well, it was pivotal in your wrestling career, clearly, but also just the lessons when you talk about deep love, clearly the desire, the vision, the belief where you were going, and even being able to look back and say, what will it be like in the future if I don't do this?
Yeah.
To make those decisions and to help guide those. I think those are all great principles we can learn on every decision, whether it's in a corporate setting and on wherever, because that's there's a lot of wisdom. Well, you also have this quote that I love that says, the number one indicator of sustained success is emotional control. Some people have asked me before, what is the best indicator of sustained success? And I said, I don't really know if I have a good answer for that. But you answered it.
Yeah.
It's emotional control. I love that. And you put another way, pain precedes emotion. So emotional control. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think, you know, emotional control, a big piece of it is just controlling our mind, not letting our thoughts spiral. You're never too high. You're never too low. I mean, doubt is real, right? Doubt is real in all of our lives. Am I good enough? Am I worthy? Can I get this done? And I think emotional control kind of keeps us at a steady state. My assessment of this is based on just some of the best athletes I've seen in the world and the ones I've coached and the ones I've wrestled alongside. And all of them, every one of them, without fail, they were able to decipher what they're manifesting in their mind that's just not real. They're creating something that's just not real. And those that went through something tough and would dramatize it and catastrophize it. So all these guys, all these elite wrestlers were able to, in the midst of the toughest workout, in the midst of maybe a loss or two, they were able to break it down and just stay steady. So emotional control just allows us to, I think it just allows us to think more clearly. And I think that's, you know, when I'm thinking emotion, it's a level-headed way of thinking.
And it's one where when somebody doesn't have emotional control, you remember it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Those are the most memorable times, whether it's sports or in a room or a family event. If they don't have it, you know it.
For sure.
It's like, that's what we talk about next
that's
time.
That's what I don't want.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And sometimes, right, it's right, the gift is you're around someone or you are what isn't wanted. And someone has the strength to tell you that's...
That's not good.
That's not good. So I need to work on me, you know? So... Yeah,
that's terrific. Well, we'll get to the title of your book in a moment, but I want to go to the subtitle. So becoming elite in life and leadership. And you talk about elite, and elite stands for excellence, leadership, initiative, teamwork, endurance. So much packed in that. We can't go through all of those. But is there one that more people struggle with than the other? Is there one that resonates to you as you think about elite, as you meet with people? Or is it very situational depending on the person? How do they work in terms of synergistically?
So, I mean, obviously, you know, the name of the book is Chosen Suffering. And I think I would say almost without fail, the capacity for someone to do difficult things takes a willingness to do difficult things, right? You learn how to do hard things by doing hard things. So every is a strong word, but I'll use it here. The people that I've been around to climb the highest and the fastest understand there's a level of difficulty that you have to move through. The under tension, right? Tension, right? We know like diamonds are forged under pressure. Like, so there's the capacity to choose, not the unintelligent way, the unintelligent way, but the hard way, right? The rite of passage it's through suffering. It's through the hardships.
But it's hard to choose that, right? Most people don't want to choose that.
right?
We're kind of hardwired to say, I think I want to be safe. I think I want to be protected. It's much easier, right, to lean back.
And be comfortable.
Eat some potato chips. Chosen suffering's not that.
Choosing, you know, I mean, chosen.
Is that born in somebody or is that learned?
Man, I think it can be learned. I think it's born, but I think it's learned as well. Like, and I think it's learned when, you know, chosen suffering is a heavy term for deep love, right? Every person on the planet, I would say, is willing to suffer for something. And my hunch is that suffering, that thing they're willing to suffer for, is likely what they love the most, right? What we love the most, what we'll suffer for the most. So the question, well, how do you find out what you love the most, right? When do you know to start suffering for? Well, I knew early on that wrestling I loved. So I love my mom, right? I love my dad, I love my family. I love my children now. Someone came in the room, I'd step in, right, to harm somebody, take me, right? So this capacity to understand, first, there's an understanding first of you know, really what is suffering all about? And it's really about, loving something enough that you're willing to put yourself under an immense amount of duress if needed. Stress is good. Mm-hmm. Like, stress is good. Duress is bad. Stress is good.
Right.
I'd much rather be stressed than in duress. I mean, the opposite of stress is being on your couch doing nothing with your life. So give me the alternative, but use it in a positive way. So I think this morning, for example, I know that my life has gotten easier. I know that. You know, financially, I'm doing better. My family, things are going well. And I'm living in a space right now where life is very comfortable. And I know the danger in that because it's not going to last. Like, it's not going to, something is around the corner. Whether it's a heartache of a family member, whether it's an illness, whether it's a setback from a professional standpoint, it's coming. So I try every morning, I try to do something that's difficult. So, you know, I like to connect the core. Sit-ups are hard. Sit-ups are hang on a bar and bring your toes to the bar. Do it 50 times a day in the morning, right? And see how that start with five and work your way up. Like, just doing hard things for me is a reminder that, one, I'm fragile. And when things are really hard, I'm soft. And I want to remind myself, which I know you like to work out, right? It's a reminder that this last rep is difficult, and this is where the learning happens. So I think
it always happens at the end.
Always happens at the end, right? Oh, at the end. So it's just really coming to terms with my humility and the power in doing things that are hard and the learning that occurs through them.
Well, Tom, the story of chosen suffering, I think, is so intriguing from a sports, from a leadership, whether it's business and whatever field you're in, choosing suffering in a way to grow, deep love in a way that will bring me forward. But what's so beautiful about your story and about your book and the way you put it is this difference and this complete opposite of chosen suffering for those purposes and unchosen suffering. And so you went through some suffering you wouldn't choose.
Yeah.
Particularly this book is dedicated to your son, Teague, and you lost him and he was only five, which I can't even imagine, but it changed your life too.
Yeah.
So even that unchosen suffering, you were able to see goodness come from that.
Yeah.
I'd love to just talk a little bit about that, but first just to honor Teague, what was he like?
You. Oh man.
What was he like?
He was a perfect rainbow after a long rain shower. He was just full of life. I was a dad that was deeply involved with him, you know, I say that, but you know, sometimes we get caught up in the work so much. It's like, I'll play with you later. I'll do it later, right? because you're busy and life's busy. Fortunately, I got to spend so much time with him in his 5 years. It wasn't long enough, but it was filled with amazing memories. So as for every parent out there in the midst of the madness of your life, it was the unthinkable, right? What I thought was my God-given right. I didn't really know God well at the time I had Teague. My God-given right that I would pass, because it's all I've ever seen in my life, that I would pass before my child, right? Children outlive their parents.
It's supposed to be.
And you think it's an absolute, it's a guarantee. Well, I learned there are no guarantees. And it wasn't chosen suffering that led me to think deeper. It wasn't chosen. Chosen suffering was something I learned that the harder you work, the luckier you get. Right? The harder and smarter you work, the more you give, the better chance you have of, you know, dealing with something on the wrestling mat that you're ready for. Be ready for it. And it made sense to me. And I built my life around it. And you will yourself. You will yourself to it, right? And you put yourself around the right people and you make the right choices. But chosen suffering was so ingrained in my life, but it never made me think much deeper than surface level. It was surface level stuff. And then the loss of my son completely flipped me on my head and made me think at a level far deeper. And that was, of course, unchosen suffering, things we don't ask for. I know you went through some hard times as a husband, things that rocked you. And it's like, where do we go from there? Do we run? Do we ignore? Or do we deal with what it is? We deal with it and we grow from it. And one of my first principles is in a great book called Inner Excellence. Jim Murphy's the writer. Fantastic book. And it's All Things Work for My Good. Now, the day of this tragedy, if someone said that for me, I would have said, no, there's something deeply wrong with you.
Right. And please don't tell people that in the middle of grief.
Right.
When people do that, it's not a good thing.
It's not right. There's nothing.
Just walk with them.
There's nothing. Just walk with me. Yeah. Walk with me. But the beauty of February 16th, 2004 was the 20th anniversary of the sudden loss of Teague. He was healthy. There were no warning signs. It was a dinner table, right? So he just had a heart attack. It doesn't happen. So 20 years later, those words, you know, all things happen for my good, actually, I can make sense of them. I can come to a place where how I've grown. My children are all believers. You know, the people I've met, the relationships. I've grown so much from that time. So I could actually bring myself around, even in this tragedy, say all things work for my good. Because the opposite would be nothing works for my good. And that's no way to live in this world. You'll end up being the guy that nobody wants to be around.
So good. Right?
So,
and I think for people listening, we won't go into it, but in your book, your journey toward exploring faith and is there a God and all of this. Right. It's a powerful journey that you went through after that, that I think people will love reading this. And I just want to quote from your book again on page 139. It says, "Through death, I realized that joy is the stabilizer of this life. Joy allows us to find contentment during the chaos." And then you go on to say, "It's the belief that regardless of what life hurls onto our train tracks, we have a higher sense of purpose, grounded by something more powerful than this world declares." Pretty powerful stuff. Those are lessons I don't think you can really have, and that wisdom to share with us, had it not been for tea, had it not been for that
grief. No question about it. I would have never thought at the level that the pain made me think at.
Well, I want to shift gears. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about coaching in OSU. And how do you describe the culture that you strive to create in your team?
Yeah. So I think the first thing, the most important thing is that there's truth, that we're honest with each other. That takes, that takes a lot of from the leader being vulnerable. It takes vulnerability as well, right? It's hard to get people to be open, honest, and truthful when you're hidden and you're guarded. So that's a principle. We deal in truths. We communicate often. Connection is critically important. We're connected to each other. We have each other's good at heart. I want the best for you. I want the best for you in all things. So I think truth and love, is a wrestling coach talking about love. That's kind of weird, but truth and love.
How do they feel? I'm curious about this. So take us inside, Tom. Some kid joins the team. Yeah. They go to this coach. They know about you. They've probably seen some videos, maybe seen your Instagram, whatever it is. Maybe know your story, maybe don't. But then you start talking about things like love. I'm here to fight, man. How do they deal with that?
Right. It's just they come around because you're going to fight the hardest, what you love the most. So it's let's hold on to what you love so much about the sport because it is brutally tough. It is mano a mano. It's one-on-one. It's
you can't hide on
you
that.
You can't hide. There's 5,000 people in arena. Next weekend, there's going to be 22,000 people. They're all watching you, and there's no room for excuses. There's no room for it. So let's hold on to. And there's a weight down. There's a cutting weight. There's so many difficult parts of it. We're going to hold on to the love aspect. So a lot of truth, a lot of love. I think I'm extremely competent in the realm of skill. Like competence matters so much, right? We trust people that, I left Syracuse, went to Iowa because the man was brilliant. He knew what he was talking about. So that's a big piece of it.
Well, you were surrounding yourself with people to challenge you.
How
do you challenge your athletes and surround them?
So the law of attraction is so powerful, right? So you get one recruit who's an elite guy in the country. The next elite guy doesn't want to be around those that haven't proven to be elite. He knows he's gotten to where he is because he's been around people that are better than him. So he knows to continue to grow, he needs to be around people that are better than him. So we've got an Olympic training center at Ohio State. These guys, they graduate. It's kind of like having a pro athlete.
It's the same kind of facilities that you had.
I say exactly.
Probably not.
The facilities are incredible here. And this Olympic training center allows us to fund world level athletes that are allowed to practice with your college guys. So you got to know, you have to have an environment that is going to keep people under tension.
Wow. So one of those pillars, the environment.
It's an environment. It's a must. You don't grow and you can walk into practice and think, doesn't matter if I ate what I ate. Doesn't matter how much I slept. Doesn't matter what my mindset is. Doesn't matter what I did last night, how long I did it for, whether it was healthy or not. I can wreck everybody in the place. That's a bad starting point. I want you thinking, if you are not fulfilling your very best, you're going to get walloped. That's the lesson that you're going to struggle. And even when you do everything right, I want the environment to be so clean, so intense, so full of love that you will struggle regardless. So some of the culture things, we highlight things that are beyond the winning. I think you talked a minute ago about the quote about, joy is a sense of, no matter what, like winning is circumstantial. We don't control winning. There are so many things in our life that can be, we can be happy but you're controlled by the circumstance. I want to be in a world where I'm not controlled completely by the circumstance. There's an underlying level of peace, and joy comes from something greater. You know, happiness is day to day, but joy is a sense of all things are good, regardless of what happens. I'm okay. And that's kind of the environment that we push for.
And I just want to tell everyone who is not saying, well, you know, I'm not running a wrestling team or I'm not running a sports team at all. Everything you just said is so applicable into every organization of thinking about that environment and how is it conducive to success and surrounding people yeah. at higher levels. That's what I love about this book. One is it opened me up to the world of wrestling, of which I knew very little, except one of our great friends and leaders here, Bart Murphy, is a great fan of wrestling and was a great wrestler. But all of those principles can be applied, like in life. That's what I love, in life and leadership. And it's not just about the, you know, so you want to wrestling, it's just life. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, the beauty of sport, particularly wrestling, but every sport, you know, you love to work out, you love to lift weights. The beauty of sport is you learn lessons in a safe environment. Like the worst thing that can happen is you lose. And you got to, if you take nothing from wrestling other than your record, you've missed it, right? Or sport, whatever it is, there's so many, you know, there's so much working together.
Talk about loss, Tom. So yeah. Some people, happiness is circumstantial. They may have been in a losing streak. It happens to the best. They may feel at loss. Maybe they've lost in a relationship or lost somebody or lost a job or whatever. How do you deal with a loss and still get up and keep going? So, you know, if a team loses, if somebody's wrestling and they do their best, you're proud of what they did, but they just didn't do it on that day. What do you say to them?
Yeah. So I'm really big on belief systems. So I think people should write out their belief system. So that would be, if I followed you around for a week, I could write out in the week, these are all the beliefs that Mr. Pritchard has. Skip Pritchard, these are his beliefs, right? He works out in the morning. He's got a belief that his well-being, that fitness is a part of his well-being. He spent time with his wife. He had dinner with her. He clearly believes in the power of relationships. So every one of us have a belief system, and we should write it out. We also have things we love to
and
do.
And write it out.
Write it out. It has to be written out. It has to be written. You know, writing is the most powerful gift that we have. So writing is so incredibly powerful. So write it out. And then, you know, we write out our I love to's, right? So because you can get caught up in the have to's. Right? Work is long. I got to go to work. I write out my love to's or my calendar first. I could fill my day with things that are wrestling related. But I know that tonight at 5:15, I'm going to the gym with my 2-year-old grandson because he has gymnastics class. I'm going to be there. It's in my calendar. I'm going. And if I put my I love to's last, I would miss that. Mm. Right. So
that's
so
good.
I think I got
I
off a little
twos.
Bit
that's
on the
good.
Question. But I love to's and the IMs. Like the world's not going to define me. They're going to try to. But yeah, this is who I am. I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. I'm a husband. I'm a coach, you know. So because the world would love to define us and put a label on us. And if we don't guard that, if we don't take quiet time to think about what we want, who we are, we get in a dangerous space. But you asked me something, what was it, more?
Well, I'm just talking about loss and dealing. What do you say to that person who's lost?
So, you know, the greatest loss of my life, right, was the loss of my son. Right after it, moments after it, that night, my mind, maybe because of just the love I had in my life, my mind was, one, I was in a terrible place. I was deeply depressed, right? I was in an immense amount of pain. But immediately it was also trying to find, not the good in it, make sense of it. And when I make sense of this, if there is any way to make sense of it, you got to try to make sense of it. So in loss and losing a wrestling match, first let's deal in truths. Let's not catastrophize it, right? You're not a bad wrestler. You didn't wrestle your perfect match, but let's focus on learning. Right? What is the learning we can take from it? Because if we catastrophize and poor me, and I'll never get there, well, then I call it wasted suffering.
Oh, I like that.
You know, there's nothing worse in life than wasted suffering.
It's a sequel.
Right. I mean, it's just you lost and you learned nothing from it. It was wasted. There has to be learning.
That's the worst
from it.
Loss, right?
It's the worst loss.
What good is that?
What did you take from it? If you're not taking something from it. So
I like you say, don't catastrophize it.
Yeah.
Don't let it label you. Don't stay there. I think what's interesting about that perspective is you're under the microscope when you're lost, you know, you can't see anything else. but you take them up to a wider view and say, wait a minute, let's take this in a bigger step. I really like the way you do that. So how about advice to somebody who's watching you and says, I want to be a coach. Mm. I want to be a coach. What do I do?
Yeah.
How do I be a coach in whatever field? I want to be a coach and help other people.
Yeah. So there's three really important. I think this, I call them the three C's. And whether it's a coach or being the president of a multi-billion dollar company, whatever it is, I think there are three C's that are really important. And the first one I mentioned a little bit earlier was competence. I mean, if you're going to have influence, right? If you're going to have influence, people have to be willing to follow you or you can't influence them. So you got to be a leader. So leadership's about competence, number one. Of the three C's, simplifying it. So if you want to coach, whatever it is you want to coach, your chance of experiencing great joy in it is become extremely competent. So learn the ins and outs. Learn about cardiovascular training. Learn about skill. Learn about people and how to ask the right questions. Learn about how to get to know people and elevate them. So competence is one. Character is another. If you want to be a great coach, people don't follow people that they see doing things that are just low-level character things. Mm-hmm. They just don't. And not for very long. You know, the old saying, it takes a long time to learn trust, easy to lose it. So, if you don't have someone's trust, they're not going to listen to you. And if you have something to say that matters, you won't get through them if they don't trust you. So character is just a huge piece. You'll be a good coach. You not that you're perfect, right? Not that where we live this unblemished life, you're not going to make mistakes. But when you make one, have the character to say, hey, I was wrong. I was wrong there. My student athletes, I'm constantly saying, listen, was there another way I could have said that? So it actually impacts you in the way that I hoped it would. And of course, after every meeting I have with an athlete, I have them write, what did you hear me say? Because what I meant to say or what I thought I said and you heard is a disconnect.
Because you're hearing it through a filter.
I'm hearing through a filter.
Right. By both
my
ways.
Filter, yeah, that's right? And they're hearing it through
their filter.
So competence, character, and then of course, you know, just if you're going to be a good coach, you've got to be able to connect. You've got to be able to connect with them because everyone's different. They all learn differently. And this guy's had this tragedy in his life, and this guy's dealt with this type of environment, and they're not all from the environment of truth and love. You know, some didn't get much of that. So
that's
so
good.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to be a good coach, those are three C's.
That's,
I think,
fantastic,
you know? Yeah.
What about I'll just end with this. What legacy do you want to leave? You know, you started off, you're telling me that I made a major decision to go from Syracuse to Iowa because I looked out at my life and I go, at the end, looking back, I didn't want to regret that. So as you look at your legacy, what legacy is the Tom Ryan legacy?
Yeah, I could say probably without hesitation that whoever interacts with me would say that, they may not know how the belief system I have, but that Tom Ryan loves God's children. That my legacy is that people that came across me felt a sense of care for them at a very high level, that God's children are real and that he loves God's children. I think that's probably the legacy I'd like to leave.
That's great. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I think it's particularly interesting that it is a word that you would not think coming up in wrestling, which is love. You brought it up a lot. You bring it up in this book. And suffering might get when you think wrestling. There's a lot of suffering, but you don't always think of it with the word linked to love. So thank you for sharing that wisdom with us. And I'm sure everybody will get a lot out of this for their own lives, whatever they're doing, because these principles are timeless. So thanks for coming
in. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Aim Higher with Skip Pritchard. Check out skippritchard.com for more episodes, interviews, book reviews, and leadership insights. Until next time, remember, don't settle for the mediocre, always aim higher.